Nếu như
globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Usako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni v južno hemisfero, oddaja, ki vam podaja novice južno od severnega povratnika. V podlagi poslušate glasbo Nepala, tokrat malo več govora o Nepalu, ob koncu oddaje pa še krajši pogovor z Ikal Angelej, borko za pravice skupnosti na severu Kenije in jugu Etiopije. V ponedeljkovem offside-u ste lahko prisluhnili problematiki gradnje jezu, gibe 3 jeza, jez, ki bi prekinil možnost bivanja na tistem področju več 10.000 prebivalcem in pa približno 20 različnim etnijam. O tem ob koncu oddaje začenjamo pa z Nepalom. O Nepalu in pa trenutnem dogajanju tam smo se pogovarjali z Indicem, z profesorjem mednarodnih odnosov na hindujski univerzi, na univerzi se upravičujem v New Delhiju, ki se ukvarja predvsem z Nepalom, sicer pa je znan kot že več desetletni borec proti, oziroma proti oroževanju za razorožitev, predvsem pa je kritičen do zunanje politike Indije. In Indija je bila tudi ena od tistih točk, zaradi katere je prišlo do nedavne politične krize, začela se v torek, seveda so vzvodi za to bili, se odvijali že več let. Skratka, da se pomaknemo nekoliko nazaj v preteklost, leta 2008 so na parlamentarnih volitvah dobili večino maoisti v Nepalu. Ti so sestavili vlado in še istega leta se je razglasila republika, monarhija se je ukinila. Prvi predsedujoči Nepalu, predsednik vlade, je bil Prachanda. Spomnili se ga vse kot pač tistega dolgoletnega borca maoistov za spremembo sistema v Nepalu, ampak že po letu dni so oblast prevzeli Nepalski kongres in pa komunistična partija Nepala, združeni marksisti in leninisti. Moramo povedati seveda, da to ime ne ponazarja njihove politične usmeritve. Ta je danes podobna socialdemokratom v Evropi, skratka vedno bolj desna, medtem ko so ko je komunistična stranka Nepala maoisti, stranka, ki v nekem splošnem oziru še vedno deluje socialdemokratsko, a vendar ne dovolj. V torek je ta največja stranka razpadla na dva dela. En del jo je zapustil, del, ki se ni strinjal s tem, da si je nepalska vojska poskrorila upornike, torej maoiste, oborožene maoiste. To je bil pač dogovor izpred let. trdijo, da so si jo, da si jo je vojska podkorila in da se je stranka Komunistična partija Nepala Maoisti toliko ugnezdila v to oblastniško strukturo, da fura modus operandi kot večina strank, da ni več izrazito v podporo tistim, za katere se je desetletja borila in seveda danes ni za izuzeti novega oboroženega konflikta v tej državi, da si ravno seveda so upanja na strani, da do česa takega ne bi prišlo. Zdaj, glavni problem, v katerega se bije politični boj, je kakšna bo nova ustava. Po petih letih razglasitve republike Nepal še vedno nima zapisane ustave in srž problema je, kakšna ta bo. Ali bo Nepal postal federacija po etnični liniji, ali se bo na tej sistemski ravni prekinilo z možnostjo, da bi družbi še naprej vladali dve glavni kasti, ki štejeta približno 20% prebivalstva, torej Brahmini in Kšatrija. Torej, ali se bo razdelila na etnije, kjer si bodo lahko svojo usodo krojili v večji meri sami, ali pa bo ostala država takšna kot je danes, torej vse zvode moči naj bi ostali v rokah Brahminov in Kšatri. Začnimo torej z pogovorom s gospodom Ačinom Vanajkom, profesorjem mednarodnih odnosov na Univerzi v Deliju.
The problem of course is the great tension between two parties, the Unified Marxist-Leninist Party, Communist Party of Nepal, and the Nepali Congress on one side, and the Maoist, Unified Maoist Communist Party of Nepal Maoist, which has now just split. The great difficulty in establishing a constitution has been the issue of federalism. Nepal, in fact, is a highly diverse society, with a very large number of indigenous people, different languages, and dominated by, and has a very complex caste structure. It's both plains and hills, and the people who live on the plains near the Indian border, who are called Madhesis, right, and the indigenous people want an ethnic federalism, which would undermine the power of the dominant castes, which are known as Brahmins and Kshatriyas, Brahmins and Kshatriyas, who make up about 30% of the population. Since two of the parties, the Nepali Congress and the United Marxist Leninist UML, Communist Party of Nepal UML, want to preserve this caste dominance, they are strongly opposed to a federalism that is based on ethnic lines. And the Unified Communist Party of Nepal Maoist is committed to this, along with the indigenous groups and the others. The making of the constitution through a constituent assembly has been extended on two occasions, and now is no longer extended, so that Nepal still does not have a constitution.
Torej, rok, da bi se ustava napisala, je potekel že dvakrat, dvakrat je bil podaljšan. Tretjič ga niso podaljševali, volitve bodo v tej državi novembra. Maoisti so se pa razšli tudi zaradi tega, ker je ta en del, ki je zapustil stranko, menil, da se stranka kot taka premalo bori za to, kar si je zadala, predvsem zato, da bi se družba uredila na, v federativnem smislu, da bi pač Nepal bil federacija. Nadaljujemo s pogovorom z gospodom Achinom Vanajkom in pa o možnostih, da bi prišlo do ponovnega oboroženega konflikta ter umešavanja Indije v notranje zadeve Nepala.
There are also suspicions between the big parties, and India behind the scenes also plays a big hand. And the worry is that the Maoists may dominate the political scene, and the other two parties, to some extent backed by India, would not like to see this happen. The Maoist party itself, the Unified Communist Party of Nepal, Maoist, has just split. And that is because a hardline faction has been very opposed to the concessions that this party has made in order to keep the Constituent Assembly going, to participate in government, and in drawing up the constitution. As a result, this section of the party has split away. It is basically opposed to the fact that the Unified Communist Party of Nepal, Maoist, actually, if you like, disarmed its cadres. In effect, disarmed its cadres and accepted their integration into the Nepali army in a way in which the Nepali army maintains its dominance. And that section of the Nepali Communist Party, Unified Communist Party of Nepal, which has split, is saying it's not clear which direction it will head, but it talks about maintaining the purity of the program and of establishing a people's republic, if necessary, through a people's revolt. Whether it will go in the direction of armed struggle again remains to be seen. It's not clear. But what is clear is that it has been bitterly opposed and to the party following the path that it has.
Etnične skupnosti v jugovzhodni Aziji se vse bolj zavedajo svojih pravic, vse bolj se zavedajo, da ne morejo še v nadalje biti podjarmljene raznim kastam, ne zgolj drugim etnijam. Daliti v Indiji se borijo za svojo svobodo že dobrih 20 let. Prebivalci Burme, o kateri smo se pogovarjali v prejšnji oddaji Južne hemisfere, so se prav tako prebudili. Sicer dosti nelagodja je ob samo konfliktu, ki se je začel na račun konflikta med muslimansko skupnostjo in budistično skupnostjo na vzhodu Mjanmara, zaradi katerih je v zadnjih dveh tednih zapustilo domove več kot 30 tisoč ljudi, a vendarle prihajajo pozitivni glasovi od tem, predvsem tudi iz strani vrha, z strani oblasti Mjanmara, ki si je zadal, da bo po 50 letih etničnih tenzij, prepirov, vojskovanj in podobno poskušal prid do neke sprave na tem področju. In enako v Nepalu vse več etničnih skupnosti se zaveda svojih pravic in jih nameravajo uveljaviti. Nadaljuje gospod Achin Vanajk.
They are very, very strong. They have been politically awakened now and they will not settle for anything less than an ethnic federalism. The details of the ethnic federalism, federal division can be discussed, but not the principle. So this is a decisive divide in which one side is going to have to win. And here the odds are probably, I would suggest, in favor of those who want an ethnic federalism. But the other two parties remain adamant and opposed to it. There is a certain worry that they may even move in the direction of calling on the army to intervene. There is talk about the restoration of the monarchy. All of these things are there. But these are all open-ended possibilities. We can't see anything. We can't see anything at the moment. We can't say anything more about where Nepal will head. It is a situation in great flux. We hope, of course, that there will not be the intervention of the army. There will not be the kind of chaos that would come in if there was any attempt to restore the monarchy, for example. And one can only hope that the existing processes, democratic processes, will continue to operate.
Kot rečeno, situacija ni rožnata. Možnost je, da se konflikt ponovno razplamti v tej državi, a vendar upanje ostaja. Nadaljujemo z tem, koliko so trpele recimo da te etnične skupnosti v Nepalu v preteklosti.
The politics of, and economy and society of Nepal. And one of the things that has happened in the last 10, 15 years, related, of course, to the Maoist upsurge, but also independent of it, is the awakening of the plains people and the indigenous people. And that awakening has now put the issue of federalism of a new kind, completely different, in which their rights should also be taken into consideration very much on the agenda. And if you look in South Asia as a whole, you will see that in the last 20, 30 years in India, there has been a great upsurge of what are known as the Dalits, the lower castes, right? And these indigenous people, others, many of them come from the lower and middle castes. So that new assertion is very, very important.
Torej, ljudje se prebujajo. Maoisti so se v preteklosti borili za pravice tistih najnižjih kast. Omenil je Dalite v Indiji. Če vas zanima njihovo življenje, njihove usode, potem je priporočljivo čtivo Arundhati Roy, Bog malih stvari. Sicer pa se za hip ustavimo tudi v Indiji. Tudi tam so se maoisti kot v Nepalu borili predvsem za najnižje kaste. Kakšen je njihov odnos do tega prehoda v to, recimo temu ustrezno oziroma to politično sfero delovanja v vladi, torej maoistov v Nepalu, kakšen je odnos indijskih maoistov do tega?
The Maoist insurgency in India actually criticized and opposed the turn that the Maoists in Nepal took in order to move into the parliamentary framework and into having a comprehensive peace agreement and so on. And they still believe, the Maoists in India still believe that the pathway is towards a kind of insurgency to overthrow the Indian state, and they felt that this was the same thing that should be done in the case of the Nepali state. So they were very critical of the turn that the Unified Communist Party of Nepal took. However, they would probably be closer to this new hardline faction that has broken away, which whose political perspectives are more in keeping with that of the Maoists. Whether this new hardline faction, which has split away from the Nepal Communist Party, will resort to armed struggle is still an open question. But politically, they would have more, there would be stronger connections between that section and the Indian insurgent Maoists.
Nadaljujemo z maoisti v Indiji. Kakšna je njihova socialna baza? Na kak način se borijo? Za koga se borijo?
They are based in the tribal central Indian forested region among tribals and the lower caste Dalits. And because of the great oppression of Dalits and tribals, they have a very solid. At the same time, of course, their basic strategy of armed struggle means that it's a highly militaristic outfit, which also behaves rather ruthlessly, not only against its opponents, but sometimes even in sorting out differences and so on within its social base. And whereas the tribals and the Dalits, of course, are looking to improve their lives in fundamental ways, the Maoists themselves have a much longer-term strategy of wanting to overthrow the Indian state and are not simply concerned with the issue of improving livelihood needs. On the other side, the Indian government, even as it talks about the need for development in this area, seems determined to try to ruthlessly crush the Maoists, which means that they will also be quite ruthless in attacking its social base. And that's why progressives in India call on both the Maoists and the Indian government to have a dialogue and not to resort to this kind of armed ruthlessness on both sides, which can only cause great damage and hurt to the poorer sections of Indian society.
Torej, medtem ko so Daliti zainteresirani predvsem v njihovo vsakodnevno dobrostanje, torej da bodo imeli streho nad glavo, hrano za jesti in podobno, seveda Maoiste zanimajo bolj dolgoročni cilji, kot je prevzem oblasti. Progresivne sile v Indiji pa si seveda želijo več dialoga med Maoisti in pa oblast Indije, oblastjo Indije. Ali je sploh kakšna resna možnost, da do tega dialoga pride, nadaljuje Achin Vanaik.
The attitude of both sides towards dialogue is not serious. Both sides, if they talk about dialogue, use it as a kind of tactic for buying time so that they can carry on with their preparations, their armed preparations. Therefore, I have to be pessimistic about the possibilities of a kind of dialogue that could move in a much more positive direction. I'm afraid that this insurgency and the ruthlessness of the Indian government will continue. The Indian government has also been extremely ruthless over so many decades in Kashmir and in the Northeast. And insofar as it feels that it has been able to manage the situation by taking this path, I don't see any reason why it will try and change its policies vis-a-vis the Naxalites. And I'm afraid I don't see the Naxalites changing their policy from the classical Maoist perspective that of the countryside surrounding the cities, that armed struggle is the best way to achieve their goal. And in the longer term, this will not succeed.
Torej, poslušali smo gospoda Vanaika iz Indije, ki nam je posredoval nekaj informacij o dogajanju v Nepalu, o Maoistih v Indiji. Zdaj pa se posvetimo jugu Etiopije, severu Kenije, planom, da bi se na tistem območju zgradil jez, četrti največji jez na svetu, s katerim bi seveda pridobivali energijo. Potem so si seveda domislili še dodatni zaslužek s tem, da bi tam gojili sladkorni trs za potrebe biogoriv in podobno. Vse to bi povsem uničilo način življenja etničnim skupnostim, ki tam prebivajo. Ne zgolj način življenja, ti bi se bile primorane izseliti. Več o sami gradnji tega jezu lahko slišite na internetni strani Radio Študent, če najdete Offside iz ponedeljka. Danes pa smo se pogovarjali z gospodično Ikal Angelej, ki se je z skupnimi silami, z različnimi etnijami na tistem področju v zadnjih 3-4 letih borila za to, da bi se gradnja jezu prekinila. Jez je zgrajen, 38% jezu je že zgrajenega, zaenkrat se je gradnja ustavila. Povejmo, da je tem skupnostim na čelu z gospodično Angelej uspelo odvrniti Evropsko investicijsko banko od tega, da bi investirala v gradnjo tega jezu, ta se povlekla. UNESCO se je prav tako odločil, da poda negativno mnenje na to gradnjo. Gre se seveda za pač območje, ki je kulturnega pomena, svetovnega kulturnega pomena. In UNESCO je pač tudi naslovil to na vse druge oddelke Združenih narodov, ki imajo kaj moči, da bi kaj takega prekinili. No, kljub temu, da se je iz financiranja povlekla Evropska investicijska banka, pa seveda že vohljajo na področju Kitajci. Kitajci so danes, mislim, da največji izvozniki hidroelektrične energije in ti so zdaj zainteresirani v to, da bi financirali to gradnjo. No, o gradnji sami, kot rečeno, več v Offside-u. Poslušajmo Ikal Angelej o temu, za kakšen način življenja se gre, na kak način se tam preživljajo, kako koristijo jezera, ki v primeru jezu ne bodo več tam obstajala.
We are on the northwestern part. Lake Turkana is basically the northwestern part of Kenya, which is a very arid area. It's a very dry area in the region, and the communities living around it are predominantly pastoralists who have, over time, turned to fishing as a way of life, just to be able to adapt to changes that are affecting them due to the changing environment. There are about five to six communities living within Lake Turkana, but again, in the Omo Basin, you have about 13 to 15 ethnic communities who live within the Omo Basin, all dependent. So you get the Omo Basin is dependent on the Omo River, and then Lake Turkana is dependent on the lake, but again, being fed by the Omo River. And all these communities depend on either the lake or the river. Their day-to-day survival. The communities in the Omo are subsistence farmers, fishermen, and pastoralists. So all depending on the life, like a three-legged stool, where if one aspect of their life is actually changed, then they would suffer because they depend on it. It's really a three-legged stool, depending with one leg being the farming, one leg being pastoralism, and the other leg being fishing. The actual issues are that, one, the environmental impact is going to be devastating with sugarcane plantations, first being very water-thirsty crops, but also using up a lot of fertilizer, which then creates phosphates, which will be dumped into Lake Turkana. That is just one impact. But in the meantime, the aspects of plantations means that they are actually forcing communities out of their homes, out of their land, to be able to put this plantation. With this, there's only one place that these communities can go to, and that means creating and exacerbating conflict between communities, both within the basin and outside the basin, into Lake Turkana, the issue that we're looking at.
Torej, skupnost jim je uspelo preprečiti nadaljno gradnjo. Ni še jasno, a se bo dejansko ta jez dokončno zgradil ali ne. A vendarle poslušamo kaj bi se imelo zgoditi v primeru, da bi se projekt končal, nadaljuje Ikal Angelej.
I think because we have as very indigenous communities, we have adapted as per changes, and the changes have been drastic and very extreme over time. The natural environment has really changed. I don't know if we can be cope with any further changes. The probability, and not just to be pessimistic, probability is that people would have to move, and if they move, they would have to go into territories where they would cause conflict. Or otherwise, then would push other communities out so that they can be able to struggle for the small resources that would be present. My, you know, best case scenario, conflict, cross-border conflict between Kenya, Sudan, and Ethiopia. That's the best case scenario. Between, you know, worst is worst, so it would spread out to the region, the greater region. How that, you know, and then it depends on any contingencies. Probably an influx of NGOs and a situation of internally displaced communities, all depending on food aid from World Food Program. That's what I see. I don't think so far we've been stretched to a limit of extreme adaptation. I don't see communities adapting further or probably moving into the urban areas and so totally forgetting about the lands they've been surviving on and moving into urban areas to look for labor.
Torej, najslabša možnost bi bila še en konflikt, torej na meji med Kenijo, Etiopijo in Sudanom. Ljudje bi se bili primorani preseliti zaradi novih okoljskih in podnebnih danosti, so resursi za življenje daleč na okoli okrnjeni in seveda novo prebivalstvo nima kam zauditi oziroma prebivalstvo pregnano iz enega konca nima kam zaiti in če pridajo kam, potem morajo seveda spostaviti konflikt za tistimi že tam živečimi. No, to je najbolj slaba od možnosti, ki se ima za zgoditi. V naslednjih oddajah vam bomo seveda še poročali o drugih zgodbah in pa nadaljevali s to, če se ima kaj slabega še zgoditi ali pa bo dejansko zmagal razum. Toliko za danes, z vami sem bil Matej, poslušali so oddajo Južna hemisfera, lepo pozdravljeni.
Globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
We travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.